Collar is here. Purple Insider available to you on the what we like to call the internets. We just had an S. What the heck? It's worth it. Mailbag today, profiles of Brian Flores and the defense, interviews, good stuff, good coverage on day of game, Sunday at Lambeau. Right afterwards, check it out, Purple Insider. Matthew is on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Is that a little buzz out there from TCO, or are you just at a random park playing basketball?
No, I am at TCO Performance Center, but I'm just walking through the parking lot here, and someone's playing music loud. So it's not exactly the TCO football buzz here. They're done with practice, the hay's in the barn, and everybody's ready to go play the Green Bay Packers.
Is that Seifert? Is Seifert playing music? Is that what's going on?
Yeah. I think he was playing a little DMX and Jay-Z. Although I did hear earlier this week that he is a big fan of Weird Al, so we talked about it. Yeah. Seifert and I have agreed to go to a Weird Al concert next year.
Put him on hold. Put him on hold. I mean,
cut him off.
I mean, can we get Gesslin on? Who else? I mean, you're not going to a Weird Al. You just said this to appease Seifert, right? Like, you're waiting for KOC to come out. You're talking. You don't really mean this, do you?
No, I do. I'll go. Yeah, I'll go. I mean, I like comedy. I like music. And who is better at combining the two?
About a million people.
Maybe Yankovic.
Maybe 5 million, 10 million, 15, 20 million. Is Sloan being held hostage? Is that why you've agreed to this?
No, I mean, just eat it. How funny is that? That's so funny.
Dave, funny?
Nope.
No. Mm-mm. Seifert is obsessed with him, though. I have also talked to him about this. I feel like he's talked to like half of Minnesota about his obsession with Weird Al. How are you arriving at Lambeau Field? Is this a drive? You driving by yourself? You driving with other reporters? What's going on?
Well, it's a good thing that Weird Al has a lot of albums that I could put in and listen to on the trip I have a particular strategy that I've developed over the years where on Saturday I go halfway there, stay in a hotel halfway, then on Sunday morning I drive to Green Bay because I hate the fact that Appleton is not that close from Green Bay, and if you want to stay in Green Bay, it's so expensive. And well, Purple Insider is thriving with a 3-0 start.
I know that.
You know, I don't want to spend that much to stay in a hotel in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
So you're cheap. That's what we're hearing. You're cheap. That's what's going on.
Well, No. I'm strategic. I am not cheap. Okay. So that's how I usually plan it out. Plus, then I can catch Georgia, Alabama.
Yeah, maybe, that should be pretty good. I understand that. Okay, let's get to injuries first. Jordan Love, limited participant in practice, including today. Your spidey sense tells you who will be the quarterback Sunday for the Packers.
I think that Jordan Love's going to play because it's a big game. And the fact that the Vikings are 3-0 has to play into this, where Green Bay's got to be looking at it saying, this might be a race to the very finish here, and there might be a playoff spot on the line. And remember, it wasn't too long ago that the Packers were going up against the Lions in the final week of the season and lost, and then gave up a playoff spot. That's got to be in the back of their minds that this could come down to, you know, December 29th, they play again at U.S. Bank Stadium. This is your big opportunity at Lambeau Field. It is Lambeau. It's not a turf field, so maybe that could play into thinking Jordan Love. But at the same time, I mean, you know, Malik Willis has played really well. And I do think that the way that the Packers have played with Malik Willis might be possibly more effective than some other offenses against Brian Flores, because the one thing that we haven't really seen them prove is that they could stop the run, because when have they had to stop the run? Mm-hmm. San Francisco went for 100 yards at 5 yards a carry for their running back. We didn't even notice go ahead, get your 5 yards because the clock's clicking down. But when it comes to a game that's maybe closer or better played and you're on the road, if a team can control the football, it might be really effective for them. I still think they're going to try to run the ball a lot, but probably do so with Jordan Love because they need this one.
You aren't suggesting that Josh Jacobs is having a better year than Aaron Jones, are you? Although I'm looking at the Josh Jacobs numbers right now. They're good. 278 rushing yards in three games, averaging 4.5. That's impressive. Jones still slightly better, but that is an interesting point. If you're not behind right away and you still have your assortment, what can an offense do if they show a little bit more balance as opposed to they fall behind?
Right, exactly. And I think that if there's anything that Matt LaFleur is really, really brilliant at, it's dialing up a run game. And, you know, we saw that in the playoffs last year against Dallas and against San Francisco, that they were so effective at creating good situations for Jordan Love because they were able to play it off the run. And I think that they went out and spent on Josh Jacobs for a reason, because he is younger than Aaron Jones. He doesn't have as much mileage on it. And I think they wanted to lean on their running back pretty heavily this year. They had been kind of switching Aaron Jones in and out with A.J. Dillon, and Dillon was just never really that great of a running back. So now they've got somebody who's a little more dynamic. And we might see Malik Willis mix into the game if Jordan Love does start, just to add that Navy offense or Air Force offense to what they're doing and be able to give the Vikings different looks. And this is it's a legitimate challenge for the Vikings, not knowing who they're going to get, how much to focus on the run, because you have to have two different game plans. It's very rare that a backup quarterback is wildly different than the starter, but that actually is the case with Malik Willis. So that is a different challenge that they haven't faced either this year.
Willis played, what, one or two plays in the first game, the Brazil game, came in very late. It is pretty startling just to look at Willis's numbers for two games in a series where he's 25 of 34 in two games. 25 of 34. That's not a lot of throws.
No, it isn't. And it speaks to the way that Matt LaFleur was able to alter their offense and use a lot of deception in the run game, a lot of different concepts in the run game that kind of had opponents' heads spinning. Although I will say, they only beat Indianapolis by, what was it, maybe like 6 points or something? I mean, Yeah. They didn't. They ran for a million yards and just didn't really put up a lot of points. And then Tennessee might draft number one next year. They're just really bad.
Yep.
Which is another factor here, too. How much credit are we giving the Green Bay Packers as a complete team when they have had two of the easier games on their schedule to start the season? But what I've been really impressed with is Jordan Love pushes the football down the field because he has a fantastic arm. They have not done that with Malik Willis. They've actually used a lot of short, quick passing with him. So they were able to flip a switch to go to their backup quarterback, which I think a lot of people wanted to see KOC do with Josh Dobbs last year, and he didn't want to do that. I'm just saying that maybe there was some validity to that, as we've seen Malik Willis be so good, but maybe some of those concepts that have worked so well with Willis end up carrying over to Jordan Love to get their shorter pass game going and their run game going. I mean, I think that this Packers offense is deep with talent and could be very difficult for this Vikings team, probably the most difficult that they've faced so far.
Just to button up Willis, and I'm with you, I still think we're going to see Love. 12 for 114 in running the ball. The guy's averaging 9.5 yards a carry. Stunning. Also, Harrigan, you might want to put it out there. Sounded like caller was calling for KOC's head. Isn't that what you heard when he didn't use Josh Dobbs, right? That it's time to let Kevin O'Connell go. Wow.
Yeah, I think the defensive coordinator in Dallas, they should hire him after last night. But to your point, Malik Willis, when he was coming out in the draft, he was talked about as maybe the most prolific running quarterback to come into the NFL since Lamar Jackson. And now Jaden Daniels kind of took over that title. But the reason that he was not drafted higher is that when you watched him in college, he was just very slow to identify stuff. And in the NFL, if you're slow, you're just going to get sacked over and over. So what Matt LaFleur has done is said, we're going to run with you a ton, and we're going to get the ball out of your hands almost immediately and maybe let you push the ball down the field one or two times, and that's really it. But the Vikings have so much talent on the defensive line, outside linebackers, versatile players. I don't know if you can just live on a short passing game if they have to do that. And we haven't seen anyone push the ball effectively down the field consistently against this team either. So this is one heck of a matchup, man. I mean, this is about as good as you get for a new score here.
Let's pause. That's Matthew Coller. He's the czar of Purple Insider. It's a must follow. Must read if you care about the Vikings. We'll talk about the return of Jordan Addison, Jefferson, and his battle with Alexander, and also talk about the Lynx and what Nafisa Collier did. 40-point average in two games and played all around. And, oh, by the way, was named Defensive Player of the Year. You're pretty good if you're Defensive Player of the Year and in two games of the first round series, you scored 80 points. That's impressive. Back with Collier in moments. Matthew Coller, Purple Insider, back with us. Am I wrong? Next segment. The number one draft choice returns the Vikings from last year's draft, Jordan Addison. He was very good last year. Injured during camp, then is ready for the Giants, then injures an ankle. He's ready to go. He's played well against the Packers before. Tell me what he adds and what this does to Jalen Naylor, considering how well he's played through the first three games.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking to myself today that it may have been a little blessing in disguise, because now Jalen Naylor has a ton of confidence that he can be a dude for this team. The catch that he made against San Francisco on that bullet from Darnold that was behind him, and he had to spin around and grab it, very impressive. And then the touchdown in the back of the end zone, I mean, that was trust from the quarterback. And also fighting off the defender, making the catch. I mean, he's really shown some great ability in these last couple weeks. And now they know he can do it, and that they can dial up stuff for him. I feel like they have a real number three wide receiver now, when I wasn't sure about that going into the season. But Addison is on a different level. I mean, this is a first-round draft pick. He's one of the best route runners in the NFL. He is great at the spectacular catch, where it doesn't have to be right on. I mean, he can go up over somebody and get it. And the fact that he wasn't even limited at all in practice today is also a good sign as well, because I think that means that, I'm sure it's a little sore, but not trying to fight through something, that it's healed and he's back at 100% and ready to go. They now look like they are a T.J. Hockenson away from making an argument for the best group of weapons that you're going to find in the NFL, which, if we're tying everything back to Sam Darnold's performance, this only helps. The only concern I have really for Darnold is the guys up front for Green Bay and the pressure, and are they going to be able to hold up against the amount of pressure that Green Bay can create? But Jordan Addison helps that, because I feel like he is good as an underneath wide receiver where you need a 7-yard out route. Bang, Jordan Addison will get open and get that for you. And I think that's what Sam Darnold has maybe lacked in his career for weapons, as guys where he could just trust dropping straight back and finding them, and now he has three of them.
So you're saying, if healthy, Jones, Hockenson, Jefferson, Addison, Naylor, those are the best weapons of any team in the league. I'm just trying to think. Like, where if McCaffrey's healthy with San Francisco, and it's McCaffrey, Kittle, Samuel, Ayuk, and I'm forgetting the third guy who's also very good.
Jennings,
exactly. He's excellent. You like the Vikings better than the 49ers? I mean, even if you're in the conversation, it's awfully impressive, but you think the Vikings are number one?
I think that's very close. It is, and the fact is that San Francisco's guys are always banged up.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true. Always.
You know, McCaffrey, if you're talking about last year, okay, well, obviously McCaffrey's one of the best players in the league last year, but he hasn't even played yet. I mean, it's
Debo's always hurt.
Right, exactly. And Kittle is banged up a lot too. So I do think that there is a very good argument for that, especially if Naylor could be a deep threat as well. But the fact that we're even having that discussion,
yeah, it's impressive.
I mean, that really shows you how good it is. And gosh, we spent all this time talking about, you know, Kevin O'Connell, and of course what he's done is remarkable with Sam Darnold. But number 18, I mean, that's the guy who's driving the success, right?
Yeah,
and the fact and we just can't downplay Aaron Jones' role in this either. I mean, this is somebody who has brought them instantaneously a dangerous run game, a screen game, a pass protection assistance in this game. They were missing out on a lot last year, I think, is what Aaron Jones is showing us.
Okay, we know Darrisaw is off to just a spectacular start, playing as well as any left tackle in football. Seems like O'Neal is as solid as ever. Correct me on either one, but I'm more curious about how the three guys in the middle have played, and you mentioned it. Packers have an impressive defensive line and the ability to put pressure on. Where are we at this year with Blake Brandel, Garrett Bradbury, and Ed Ingram?
Yeah, it hasn't been ideal. It's sort of funny because the guy with the least amount of experience has been by far the best of the three, and that's Blake Brandel. The way that, with his size, he double-team blocks with Christian Darrisaw in the run game has been something to see. I mean, it's like a mountain moving people on that left side, so that's been a huge asset. Bradbury's been good in the run game, but he's dealing with a knee and an ankle injury that he's had at different times over these first few games. I think you really started to see that last week, and then it's Kenny Clark week, so everyone be terrified. And as far as right guard, it sounds like Dalton Risner is on his way back, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's on his way to the starting lineup. Ingram has been as bad as any right guard we've seen in the last 10 years, and there's been a lot of bad right guards over the last 10 years for this team.
Yeah.
It's just that you keep waiting and you keep waiting for the next step, the development. It's just not there. I think the quick losses happen way too often. And this is the thing to be terrified of the Green Bay Packers. They will bring in their first-round pick, Lucas Van Ness, and rush him up the middle. They have Devontae Wyatt, first-round pick. They'll rush him. Kenny Clark has ruined Vikings games against the Packers in previous years. And then they'll blitz dudes as well. I really think that it's a massive concern in this game, and there's no answer when both of them are struggling. I think if one of them is struggling, you can help out a little bit, but if both are getting beat consistently, there's really nothing you can do. So they're going to have to get the ball out quick, I think, a lot in this game against the Packers, and use, you know, the rollouts, deception, those, all the different tools at their and screens to try to slow them down a little bit, because I just don't think they're going to win that matchup.
Okay, let's talk links. You pay close attention to the WNBA. Saw a picture. You were there for game two.
Yep.
It was the Collier show. I mean, it was just brilliant. So 38 one game, 42 another. A lot of scoring. Finally, some better Lynx defense, second half, game two. So she averages 40 points for two games. She's named Defensive Player of the Year. She gets 66 of the 67. Second place votes for MVP in the league. What impresses you most about it? And then I saw your tweet the other day saying about time she gets more attention. If she gets 66 of the 67 second place MVP votes, isn't she drawing a fair amount of attention?
Yeah, I just don't think that there's a whole lot of discussion about her as being one of the best players in the league. I think that a lot of the attention went to one player this year in the WNBA. So I'd like to see it distributed a little bit more to the other stars in the league. But, you know, when Nafisa Collier was drafted, she's taken out of UConn. She wins Rookie of the Year. And, of course, everyone goes, oh, she's our next Maya Moore. And my thought was, come on, guys, don't do that to her. That's not fair. That's the GOAT.
Nobody really projected her as a superstar, right? They said solid player,
yeah.
Six pick, she's going to start, you can win with her, but nobody thought she was a superstar of this caliber, correct?
100%. Yep, 100%. I think that people thought this is a very solid, like, maybe secondary scorer on a great team, that kind of thing. I don't think we saw the next Maya Moore coming, but the other night she played like Maya Moore, and she has in the playoffs, and it is a complete all-around game. I don't like WNBA to NBA comparisons, but it's her quiet nature is very Tim Duncan-like, where it's she's not out there, she's not demonstrative, she's not doing a lot of self-promotion. She just plays every single possession right and hard and is so effective and has so many different things in her bag, where she made 12 out of 14 free throws. So she's taking the punishment, getting to the hoop. She made 2 out of 3 3-pointers. She's shooting from deep. She had fadeaways, layups, plays out of the post, and kickouts. She added 4 assists. She scored 42 points and had 4 assists. I mean, it was one of the best basketball games I've ever seen by anyone in person before.
Defensive player of the year. I mean, we're extolling all these things offensively, and they said she's the best defensive player in the game. You know, we've had this debate in town, you know, of you got Edwards, you got Kaprizov, and you got JJ. Yep. Like, who's the top superstar right now? None of the three right now, because as they're all great, none of them finished second in MVP voting while also winning Defensive Player of the Year. That's one person.
And the crazy thing about that, there's two things that go to Cheryl Reeves' credit. The Defensive Player of the Year, she's had to play the four when she really is probably a three. And so she's taken on the Breanna Stewarts, and she was guarding Asia Wilson more than you would ever want her doing that when they were playing Vegas and beating Vegas. And so trusting her technique to be able to, and her effort to play like that was really something. The other thing is, too, that Cheryl Reeves, for about 3 years, was demanding that Nafisa Collier became the best player she could be. And she said at one point that she told Fee, the other team better know every night who our best player is, and it's you. And since then, her aggressiveness has gone through the roof, and her confidence has gone through the roof, and it's just really been something to see the synergy between the coach and the player like that. And I think our friend Patrick Royce, who is a Cheryl Reeves doubter, I think even he had to admit this is one of the best coaching jobs we've seen.
And general manager, right? The fact that it's the combination, what she's pulling off. All right, sir. I'll be paying attention on Sunday. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Paying attention to the Lynx, too, on Sunday, because they open with the Sun in the semifinals. Am I wrong? And also a quick immigration note after weather, just to get him going. I mean, I got to throw another one in. I mean, it's a 34. We just got to eat in the time.
You're already chewing quite a bit off.
Did I mention that tuna, man? Boom, let's go. What do you have?
Let's start with presidential politics, shall we? The run-up to the election. And
yes.
I'm getting kind of tired, in fact, very tired of the will they or won't they debate again, and Kamala needs to sit down for more interviews.
Well, I'd never say that.
No, you've
not. Not after I watched that one the other day. No, she shouldn't.
That's enough!
Can't answer a question.
I think we need to set rules. Set rules for presidential candidates.
You're the rule maker now.
When you jump into the race, when you are your big party's nominee, when it's official.
You're the big knocker.
You have 4 commitments that must be made for you to continue to be on the ballot.
Right. I'm jotting these down. I got number one, right here.
Standard debate with your opponent. We'll call it a 2-hour debate. Each person at a podium. Just like we've seen a million times.
One debate?
You must commit to at least one debate. You can, I mean, if the candidates want to do more, they can.
Oh, okay.
But this is the commitment. You commit to one.
Got it.
Number two, a long-form interview with a journalist chosen by, you know, the debate committee or whatever, you know, the people that we don't care anymore about. But somebody independent chooses the journalist, long-form interview. We're talking, you know, 90 minutes or something like that, prime time.
Yep.
Number three, an hour-long press conference with the current White House press corps. You stand up, you take all the questions they're throwing at you. No dodging.
Okay. Got it. Four.
Number four.
Come on this show.
That would be good. That would be really good.
Eat some of that tuna that I made today.
Nobody wants your tuna with grapes and pickles and all the other stuff.
Amazing.
Way too busy. Number four is a 2-hour town hall with voters of all sorts of backgrounds and political leanings. And by the way, do we need a VP debate to hear from the guys competing to be the person we actually won't care about for the next 4 years? No, we don't. Got to hit the thing. Got to have the thing.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
Normally, your thing issues happen later in the day. Did I mention that most likely we're going to bring debate after dark back as long as I can figure out cue for Tuesday? Walls, Vance.
You and Adam?
Yep. We tried like 10 of the people, but they were busy. So
yeah, you're right. It's more Adam and you.
Yeah, we have to settle for Adam. Yeah. Normally I don't give a bleep, to quote Daniel. about a VP debate, but it's walls and we're Minnesota, so we care. I think these are fairly good. I'd like to see a few more print requirements because this is all electronic. You're just obsessed with the electronic.
Do you really think people are going to read?
Yeah, I think people read. I think people pay attention. No. I think, you know, there's the Star Tribune, the Pioneer Press, Washington Post, if the Lakeland Shores Bugle, you know.
Harris or Trump sits down for an interview with a TV journalist versus, hey, read about it in the Times. Come on.
No, you're wrong, because if it's the Times in particular, and you can say how liberal it is, but it still shapes more than any outlet, then all the TVs are going to be reacting. Did you hear what Trump said to the New York Times? Did you hear what Harris said to the New York Times? And they'll be covering it.
Oh, so you want the TV journalists to then tell you what's important, what they said, versus give us the whole thing?
Well, you can read the story, too.
Liberal journalist, Chad? That's what you want?
That's fine. They can interview plenty of other outlets.
Sounds like you.
It's a good start. We've never had two presidential candidates in the history of our country who are more inept at answering questions than these two.
They're really good at talking, though.
They talk and talk and talk. And we know he's, you know, I mean, to see him with Zelensky today was amazing. But then her interview with Rule. And it's a person who just was raving about her last week on Bill Maher. And even with her, she was unwilling to ask a question. I'm going to say you're headed there. Very good start.
Oh.
Very good. It's a kind of patting on the head.
Yeah. I mean, it should be better, more praise, but. That's more than I normally get from you because you refuse to dish it out, which is fine.
Yeah. Should we pause here and leave time, or you want to go? It's your segment.
I've got a quicker one. I've got a quicker one. We'll do this one right now.
I'm told you're very good at the quicker ones.
You know I am. Anytime. Mm-hmm. Anytime. I got a wedding to go to tonight. Buddy Dave?
My kid is also, oldest kid, is also attending the Friday weddings.
See, this is what I'm talking about.
Cheapskates.
Friday weddings.
People.
No. They should be the wave of the future.
Oh, stop.
There are so many benefits. It forces everything to be a little more condensed. You start a little later.
Some of us like hanging out with people.
Yeah, you don't have the awkward time between the ceremony and the reception. Nobody works on Fridays anyway, let's be honest. So it's not even like you're having to take...
Right here, salt mine, two of us.
Exactly. You're out at 3. You don't even have to knock off early to get to the wedding. Yep. By the way, you still have your entire weekend. You don't have to devote your Saturday to some people who you... Yeah, there's a good chance, even if you're the plus one, you don't even know them. You don't even care about them. You're just dragged along there.
So it sounds like you really are hating going to this wedding.
No, I'm looking forward to going to this wedding. Like I said, it's a buddy of mine. But if, say, you know, it was
Lindsay
my wife saying, if it was Lindsay saying, hey, my coworkers are getting married, we got to go to the wedding, I don't want to go.
You wouldn't want to go if it was right here in the office right now, though, either.
If it was somebody I knew and loved, I would.
No, that's not what you said. If it's one of Lindsay's friends who you're not that crazy about, it has nothing to do with Friday or Saturday, you don't want to go.
Does anybody?
See, I think that's an addendum to, am I wrong? More people should go single without their plus one, if the plus one really doesn't want to go. How about that?
That's ridiculous.
Who
are you going to dance with, Chad?
There's a lot of single people there.
Yeah, that's the point. Mm-hmm. You're trying to break up marriages.
No,
at a wedding
I'm not.
Now.
But if
pro mistress,
if you really like Fred, I'm going to go with your friend Fred. And Lindsay really doesn't like Fred. Then Lindsay's going to be kind of, we going? When are we going? You'll get it. Versus you want to stay there and have fun with Fred.
You know why I go to weddings for her side of the family or her coworkers?
Because get away from
your
kids.
I support my spouse, Chad. Maybe you could learn a few things about helping out a little bit once in a while. Anyway, also, by the way, if you do party too hard, you got 2 days to sober up and get right instead of just one.
Am I wrong?
Okay, I think that's it. That's it. For the alcoholics out there, you should be in favor of the Friday because, boom, you're used to happy hour, and it's like happy hour, and then you can just lay around the house for 2 days.
Exactly right.
No, I'm still more of a Saturday. What about Wednesday? You want a Wednesday wedding, too?
It is hump day.
Hump day. Did you really go with hump day?
Did I just win Sebastian Maniscalco tickets?
No, you did not. A texter says to Dave Harrigan, What is the ideal day for a destination wedding?
There isn't an ideal destination wedding day. Destination weddings are selfish.
So I decide I'm going to get married again. And I decide to get married outside of this state. Of course, I'd invite both of you.
Thank you. I'll be there.
Jason, Frugal, you, Cheapskate.
Thank you.
You're not coming.
No.
No matter what.
Nope. What if if you pay for
it? It's in Hudson.
If you pay for my travel expenses.
I have to Trey. I have to pay it to Trey.
Would you really not come, or is this just like a radio bet?
Give me a place. Where are you having
Cleveland?
Me? No.
Carmel, California?
No.
Okay.
I'm
Des Moines.
Not buying an airline ticket
you
to go to
You wouldn't buy
Chad's.
A ticket?
No, not to go to Chad's wedding.
I would.
I don't like Chad that much.
That's fair.
You love me. You love me, right.
You don't
but
like
you may
that.
Not like me.
Mm.
Oh. What if I got to Am I Wrong at 2:35?
Also, Friday weddings? Come on.
Week!
Come on. And I don't even think you're saving that much money, to be honest. I think so many people, the Friday wedding has become so common now.
Yeah, it's for the future.
No, it's not.
How is it better?
You get the whole weekend. Nobody's stealing your entire Saturday to say, hey, come to my ceremony, hang out for 2 hours.
What are you doing on a normal Saturday?
Exactly. Is your life
a lot going on?
Give me a break.
We got soccer tomorrow, baby. Okay. The mangoes and the marigolds are both in action.
I don't think most weddings are going to interfere with mango marigold action.
Okay. Is there a long
rivalry?
Have you
been to a Catholic wedding? They're still interfering.
You know what it sounds like? He doesn't want to attend a wedding or reception.
You just don't like
love. Just admit it. You don't like to hang out with
people. I really enjoy weddings. I just don't like them taking my Saturday, especially when I'm the plus one.
When's the last time you've been to a wedding? We're out of that.
It's been a while.
Soon. We'll be soon to like our kids.
Oh. Yeah, I have one that might be headed that way.
Youch.
What's it going to be like when you're calling me grandpa? I'm not prepared for that.
Yeah.
Are you?
No. No. No, and both. I mean, Sam has a high school girlfriend, but they've been together for 2 years, which makes me mildly concerned.
Did you have the big birds and the bees talk?
Seth and I had the bird and the bees talk. Because the school sends the sex ed curriculum home.
Yep.
And so we go through the whole thing, and we're talking about, you know, there is a section about consent.
Yeah.
Right? And so
sure.
We talked about consent, very important. And Seth is like, oh, is that like the gopher football? This is fifth grade, Seth DeRussia. Is that like the gopher football thing that
he knew
you had on the news? I'm like, all right.
Yeah, they're way ahead of us.
Yeah.
Quickly, what do we have?
Thank you. Give me 30 seconds.
Yeah.
climate experts this week came out with a report that
said... We're doing climate change?
Here's a good
am
way.
Wrong? Wow.
Can you listen?
Jeez.
I've got a good punchline here. I don't even have time to give it anymore.
Oh, we'll decide.
The best way to save the planet might just be to slow down planes.
Oh, that's right.
Take an extra hour so that we have fewer emissions. This is the worst idea.
Yeah.
Climate has ever had for even suggesting something as ridiculous as making us spend more time on the plane. Science, take a couple plays off. Shut down big science for the week. Yeah. You're done.
Yeah. Am I wrong?
To quote Daniel Brundage, go to hell. I mean, seriously, come on. No, we're not going to fly long. I mean, so, you know, one of your next trips to help the climate, you're going to fly three times as long?
Climate is somebody else's problem, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'm real concerned until, like, come on.
It really alters my life.
No.
Yeah. Maybe a bonus one during Canopy.
No.
Come on.
Come on. One more.